Deer Trucking Awesome. What do you think of when someone says tough? Honestly, I think of a Toyota truck. Tundra's one mean mother of a truck with a twin-turbo V6, an incredible going power, and the Tacoma claws through terrain with a taller suspension and lots of creature comforts in the cockpit. Both Toyota trucks are decked out with tons of cool features and tech you'll dig. Check them out at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
And this ball in the air, deep right center field.
Two-run home run, Trevor Story.
Way back, Myers, watch it go. Chuck Nasty.
Two-run home run, David Dahl.
And Nolan drives this high in the air, deep left field. Take a good look, you won't see it for long.
I don't want to lose your love tonight.
Welcome in to the DNVR Rockies podcast presented by Strava Craft Coffee. Do remember to use that promo code DNVR20 because you'll get 20% off of your entire purchase of the Strava Craft Coffee. I am your host, Drew Kreisman. I am the managing editor of DNVR Rockies. With me, as always, is our beat writer, Patrick Lyons. And joining us throughout the conversation today will be our producer, Kel Sorbo, to discuss the cancellation of the, I guess the postponement, technically, of this final game of the Colorado Rockies series against the Arizona Diamondbacks. In a statement released this afternoon by the Rockies on Twitter, it was said that the players, the Colorado Rockies players, led a movement to stand in solidarity with movements we have seen across this country and the NBA, and now we're even seeing in the NHL, of choosing to not allow people to have sports as an escapism while other things are going on. I spoke for probably 45 minutes last night, uninterrupted, on the subject, and while I may have a few more things to add, I really wanted to hand this over to Patrick and Kale to share their thoughts on what's going on today and just their own personal interactions. Patrick, why don't we start with you?
Well, I'm really proud of the Rockies for, you know, doing better late than never. I certainly, like a lot of folks who have gotten to know this team and the players on the team, you would have hoped they would have maybe come to this decision yesterday, particularly with Matt Kemp being on the team and with Ian Desmond having already, you know, made the statements he did before the beginning of summer camp and how much, you know, positive feedback he got from that. So it would have been great if it came last night. It didn't, but I think they came to their senses and realized the statement that they could make. It might not be one that has this everlasting effect that changes the world forever and ever, but it is one that helps the dialogue. It is one in which children tonight will come home from school, or if they're already home with distance learning, they're going to want to turn the game on and see if the Rockies can get a sweep. It's a really important game for the team Thursday evening before they start a series with San Diego Padres, and the game's not going to be on. Why? And now the conversation starts.
Exactly.
And that is the first domino, and that is exactly, you know, what we need in our society is to talk and to actually listen. And I'm really proud of the players in that locker room and the coaching staff too, that I imagine has supported them for this decision that they've made today.
Yeah, Kale, were you, I mean, yeah, why don't you just hop in there, man? I'm not going to put it as a question.
I was one of the people similar to you guys. I felt they shouldn't have been playing last night. And after what happened in the NBA yesterday and all the statements they've made, and I, especially in solidarity with Matt Kemp and what his decision was last night, I thought they shouldn't have been playing. And so this, similar to what Patrick just said, I echo the statements, better late than never. I feel the same way about what the NHL is doing right now, better late than never. And I just sort of want to respond to a lot of points I've been seeing online about what's the point of all this, what does this accomplish? And the conversation we're having right now is what this accomplishes, let alone that the conversations that are going on online. This has been brought into a national conversation yet again. And kudos to the players from the NBA and the WNBA for leading the charge, for bringing that conversation back into the national forefront, and really taking a pressure. I mean, within an hour of postponing and basically protesting the game yesterday, the Milwaukee Bucks leadership was on the phone with the Attorney General. And so real change can happen from these things. And people who are saying, like, the whole shut up and dribble and all that that goes back, I'm proud of these athletes for using their platforms to try and make a change, because clearly what we're doing isn't working. And you might have a point by saying this isn't going to accomplish anything, and if it doesn't accomplish anything, that's fine. At least people are trying to do something, because what we're doing right now isn't working.
Yeah, you stand up anyway. It seems, and my apologies for using such a phrase that I never thought I would use on a podcast like this, but profoundly un-American to me to suggest that you don't try in the face of injustice, that you do nothing. That has simply never been the case here. And so, yeah, I echo all of those sentiments. Proud of the team for making this stand. I know there was a lot of consternation about, you know, did his teammates not really stand with him, and that some of the comments, and I saw people picking apart some of the things that Charlie Blackman and Kyle Freeland had to say. And, you know, I think my take on all of that is this, and I said a little bit of that last night, like, those conversations need to be understood, and I think we should put pressure on people. What does it mean to stand with your teammates? And some people calling out Anthony Rizzo for making very strong statements, but maybe not standing with Jason Hayward. And it's a very difficult and complicated time. But what I hope we can do in all of these instances, whether it's who chooses to protest when, or who said or did the right or wrong thing, or the individual cases that we're talking about of police brutality, that we get past arguing the details of every single little thing and try to find the things that we agree on and make change. Focus on that. When you spend 4, 5, 6 hours out of your day fighting over whether or not this case is actually an example of the principle we agree on, if you're with me, if you're with us, you're with us. And it's as simple as that. If you believe that everybody in this country ought to be treated fairly and equally, then you're with us. And if you're for what these players are doing, which is exercising their First Amendment right to free speech, then you're with them. And for me, I think we've got to do a better job. So those other conversations are important. I don't want to belittle, you know, this idea. I have a hard time coming to a conclusion on whether or not his teammates left Matt Kemp out on a limb and, you know, guys were telling their teammates to play. That's a tough one for me to jump in and be judge, jury, and executioner on. Like, I want us to focus on what each one of us individually. I can't control what Charlie Blackman or Trevor Story or Nolan Arenado do or don't do. We can remark that we're proud of them when they do something, that we agree with their decision. We can't control what they do. Other than that, we can only work with the people who agree with us on the things that matter, the fundamental changes that we can make. I went off again. There, right, Patrick, when you hop back in there.
Yeah, no, I think for some players who maybe, you know, want to play the game, you know, whatever sport it is, they play sports in a lot of ways, and they do this as an escape, right? That is an outlet for them. I mean, take a guy like Josh Hamilton, where when he's playing the game of baseball and he's on that diamond, besides being one of the best ball players in the game when he was healthy, he was a perfect, you know, embodiment of a baseball player, of what you might want, right? He's just a beautiful soul, like like all athletes, just being themselves on the court, you know, warts and all, on the field, whatever it may be. But then as soon as he got away from the game, as soon as there wasn't that escape for him, that's when his demons would come out and, you know, use various narcotics and you know, abuse drugs and alcohol and things of that nature. And so I think, you know, for a lot of players, they want to escape in the sport when, again, as you pointed out last night, as Sean Doolittle said, escape, you know, in sports is what we get in a functioning society. And unfortunately, we don't have that right now. So we don't deserve those things. That's our not so much our penalty, it's our privilege, right? When all of us, we got our license, we were told, hey, driving is a privilege, not a right. All human beings, I imagine, all around, no matter what language you speak, I imagine that's part of the booklet that they need to learn. It has nothing to do with being white or otherwise. And that was something I think a lot of people struggled after listening to your podcast last night, is separating white privilege and privilege. We have privilege just in America to be able to go to a store down the street, whether you have to take the bus, whether you have to walk or otherwise, and you can go and buy a new shirt and a bag of potato chips. Not every country in the world has that privilege. If you live in some parts of Asia or in Africa, you do not have that kind of privilege. So we have that privilege in America to do those things and to be able to watch sports. If we don't get it, that's not the end of the world. That's not any punishment. It is only a reward for us for doing what we need to do. And, you know, I think that's just a point that gets lost on a lot of people. And yes, maybe it is only one night. Yes, maybe it is only in certain parts of the country. But again, that dialogue starts, and maybe finally people start to listen, people start to learn, and maybe we can finally get the change that, you know, our country really needs right now.
And I just want to bring it back to what I think is one of the most, and it's crazy that this happened over a year ago at this point, but what I thought was one of the most poignant messages on this was Champ Bailey's Hall of Fame speech when he went into the Hall of Fame last year. His primary point to the end of his speech was, please listen. Like, the experiences that I have, like, yes, I'm an athlete, but I'm a black man first. And my experiences because of that, and my brothers and sisters who have gone through these same struggles, just please listen to us. That was the purity of his plea, I should say. Sorry about my dog in the background, everybody.
It's cute poppers. It's all right.
And I think that is what this does, is it creates a conversation where, whether it's good or bad, people are forced to listen.
Yeah, and we're still working on that, I think, a little bit. And that's why I wanted to make, you know, the main theme of what I talked about last night, a plea for people to stop having that knee-jerk debate reaction. Look, I'm someone who grew up in the world of, like, competitive debate and philosophy major and, like, picking apart arguments. It's what I do daily. It's what I do on this podcast. It's what I'm good at, is arguing and using logic and reason and all of these things. And it's just the reflexology to come back to, oh, this, but, you know, was this person really a saint? Make it about this individual incident or that one, when there's hundreds of them or there's thousands of them. And to obfuscate, just like we're talking about here, what does one game really do? What does it really matter? Aren't they really just punishing the fans? You know, all of this stuff is getting away from the conversation that's supposed to be happening, which is, should anybody in this country be allowed to be killed by the police with impunity? Anybody? Is that a country we want to live in? Because it seems to me from our founding documents that is precisely antithetical to the reason that we exist.
Yeah, and the only thing I want to add to that is, in my opinion, police officers don't deserve to be judge, jury, and executioner. And even if you're guilty, it's stated in our Constitution, you're innocent until proven guilty. And even if you are guilty, most of the time, in my opinion, all of the time, that doesn't mean you deserve to die. And so I think that's where it gets lost on the focus. I wish we could stop looking at these isolated incidents, like you're saying, and talk about the problem as a whole and not go, did he have a knife? Did he not have a knife in this current case or any of that? Or looking at their criminal history. I don't think it matters because ultimately at the end of the day, none of those people deserve to die.
I mean, don't we have thousands of hundreds of thousands of people in prisons? They were all criminals, right? They all have a record. Why weren't they killed?
Right.
That's a stupid question, right?
Right.
They didn't deserve to die. And yet we have other people being murdered for writing a bad check or trying to sell loose cigarettes, things of that nature. And while, again, these things just don't really line up, and it's awful. It's sickening. It's sad. It's atrocious. And again, you know, to what you were saying, Drew, about debating, one of the key elements of that is kind of know your opponent's debate, know what your opponent is going to say about their side, so you can at least maybe give them a little credit for it, but then knock it down. One of the most inspirational or most enjoyable, whether you like rap or not, moments in a movie is in 8 Mile, where at the end, Eminem's character essentially cuts down everything about himself so that the other performer has nothing to say about him.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a strange way to go, and I don't know how that entirely fits into this argument. But it's just this idea of understanding the situation, and I think, again, just listen, and if you say, I don't get this, I think all of these people are wrong, then try to understand it, and then from there, maybe you can cut down that side. But listen for a little bit and try to understand it. You don't have to change how you feel, but just try to understand it and just listen.
Yeah, the last thing I'll say on this is for the people, even in the comments right now, saying that we're getting political and all that, I don't know when being anti-murder became a political statement. Because I thought being anti-murder was just being human.
Sort of, yeah. This really should be basic accepted stuff. And the fact that it's not is why life is getting interrupted. And I'll say this one way or another, whether if people don't listen, right, that's the conversation, the point that you two, I think, have just so eloquently made. If people are inclined to not listen and to dig in and say, play the damn games, do the damn thing, I'm not going to, then the protests will continue. The marches in the street will continue. Other games will get canceled. Seasons may get canceled. Especially in places like the NBA, where these guys experience this stuff firsthand and personally. And so that's the answer, ironically, for you there. If the question is, man, what do we got to do? So I got to stop hearing about this all the time on social media, and they're canceling games. And what do I have to do? Help solve the problem. That's what you have to do. And then we can get all the stuff back.
So in my life, I've had several really good friends and two people that I would call best friends. And one was in high school. We had all of the same classes. Our senior year, we rigged it up to be that way.
I had one of those. Those are the times, man.
Probably screwed myself a little bit on some of the electives with setting myself up for college, but who cares? We were seniors. Let's have a good time. And another best friend who was, you know, a guy I asked to be the best man at my wedding, met in college. And both of those guys, on a daily basis, when they go out in the world and they do their job, they fear for their lives. Both of them, every day when they go out, there's a chance that they don't come back home and someone could shoot or kill them. Now, my one friend is a police officer and my other best friend is a black man. And when I think about the safety of both of those two men, I worry way more about my best friend, Jesse, because there's nothing he can do to change the situation. He can't change his skin color. He can change how he maybe responds, but that doesn't mean anything. So my friend who's a police officer, I know that I don't want him to get hurt. I don't want him to get shot and killed. I want him to be protected. But I know there's millions more things that can be done to help and support him in order to fix that situation. But my friend, my best friend, who's black, he does not have that opportunity. And that's why I err on that side of, you know, hey, whose side are you on? Blue lives, black lives? Yes, we want all lives to matter, but all lives don't matter until black lives matter. I think we all agree blue lives matter.
Yeah.
So what's the point?
That's, yeah, that was never a question.
All lives don't matter until black lives matter.
Right. Yeah. Kel, do you have anything else? Because I don't know.
I don't have anything else on that other than I'm really proud of the guys for doing something today, even if I think they should have done something yesterday. Like I said, better late than never. And I'm really, really glad that people and athletes all across sports, from the NBA to the WNBA to Major League Soccer to things happening even overseas now, are taking a stand in solidarity for an issue that is pervasive throughout our society right now. I'm really proud of the athletes for doing something.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm glad you keep bringing up, by the way, the WNBA, because they've been massive leaders in this and have not gotten enough credit, and the international community, that it's something that we have to recognize, like, this is a massive movement, right? And so we're beyond the point of, again, it's beyond the point of debate about whether or not something is wrong. The point is, what are we going to change? That's the question. That's the question. What are we going to change? Because change is coming. One way or another, folks, change is coming to a town, state, city, country near you. Change is on its way. So get involved and help shape that change. We all have a moral obligation to impact the world around us. I also have an obligation to occasionally discuss sports. Actually, more often, there's a segue for you. I do want to, as inartfully as that was, talk a little bit about baseball. And, you know, because this series is now over.
Hey, rapid,
rapid, the Rockies have now swept the Arizona Diamondbacks in what turned into a three-game set. And because I didn't really discuss the baseball game much last night. And, we've had the palate. We've said the conversation. I think we're all allowed to move into this space now. And I'll throw it out to you both. And Kale, since you're here with us right now, and you can just bring the fan perspective of, first of all, we were all very sensitive and heightened emotionally last night to begin with. And then we're watching this Rockies game. And then they're up 8-1, and you almost, like, I had this big, like, sigh of, like, okay, this can just end, and I cannot even think about it. And then they blew that.
Yeah, what? After the Chuck Grand Slam, I thought we were done. I thought I could pack up and not worry about it, and that was not the case.
No, no. On a scale of 1 to 10, what is your level of concern for the Colorado Rockies bullpen?
Ooh, can I, like, an 8.5? That's fair. There's a couple of arms I trust, but even the ones I thought I trusted, I'm not feeling great about.
I might have to say a Spinal Tap 11. At this point, it's
this one goes hard to 11.
Yeah, they're on. This is a whole new chart that they're starting to deal with right now. So, but they're keeping it interesting, to say the least. You have to watch every out, whether you like it or not. It will be painful. And I think that will only make you love this team even more. Yeah, yeah. You'll be bald by the end of it from pulling your hair out, but you will love the team even more.
It's so, yeah, Kinley did some stuff, and Diaz did some stuff, and it got real, real tight there at the end. But how you like Jeff Hoffman closer? How about that?
Number five. He's safe, the fifth
baby.
Guy.
Like, why not?
Is that right? He's the fifth. I was trying to do a quick count. So it's Wade Davis, Jairo Diaz. Estevez has picked one up, right?
Yep.
Yeah, he had Daniel a one Bard. Pitch.
Yeah.
Daniel Bard. Yency Almonte has one, doesn't he?
So that's six.
So we're at. So I Hoffman, think the over under that we had set was six, probably was 5.5.
5.5, and they're all. Yeah. And
yeah, that was when there was like only two guys with a save.
Hoffman, let's go. Wow. Putting us at the over. Yeah. Hey, he got it done. That was nails, dude. Like, that was.
Well, the Avs game, which was a one-goal game with six men on the ice for the Dallas Stars, and the Rockies having blown an 8-1 lead, were all coming down within like the same 30 seconds of each other, and I thought my heart was going to explode
that night. I saw Michaela Perkins was doing the same thing. She's like, you guys, can we not do this to my heart? Patrick, other than the bullpen, the one thing I really, you know, in any normal times would have talked ad nauseum about on last night's podcast and done a big dance in, and I told you so, was of course about John Gray coming out, shoving at 96, six innings, one run baseball. And really the one run they got against him was a scratch it out sack fly after a single that could have been a double play. I mean, they barely got three hits against John Gray. He was as close to dominant as we've seen him all year.
Yeah, nothing but singles. He was is fantastic over those six innings, as we kind of, you know, looked at it on Tuesday night, that they really needed some length out of him because of the series that were coming up and still in the middle of all of this. And yeah, they got that length and they needed it because they only had three more innings worth of outs in them. And had he not gone six, then again, think about that extra inning. If the D-backs had an extra inning to go back out there and have three outs at the plate, you know, the Rockies don't come away with that victory. So that was just huge. It gets him back on track, just puts him right where he needs to be, and it just settles things. Now you got a three-game win streak going into the Padres series, and it's really big, not just for John, but just for the entire pitching staff, who, you know, the numbers have looked good, and they've pitched better than the numbers in a lot of way, but I think John finally needs to get that first big one out of the way, and, you know, and you see what the Diamondbacks did once he left the game, and it's all the more reason for him to feel really good about what he was able to do Wednesday night in that victory.
Yeah, it was his best game of the year, I thought, by a large margin, and it was really great because even once after he bounced back after his really bad game, where he gave up, what was it, six runs in like four innings or something? I forget what it was.
Yeah, to the Diamondbacks, the same lineup,
the same team. It was not great. He bounced back. He was throwing that slider really, really well. His fastball was hitting there, but a little bit dangerous because the velocity wasn't there. So to see him come out and just be able to throw 96 over the plate, really, you know, paint the corners of the strike zone and do all the things you want John Gray to do last night was really awesome to see. And like you said, they needed every pitch out of him because of what ended up happening afterwards.
Yeah. I have absolutely no idea, by the way. Total dumb luck that I predicted or guessed that he was going to have his velo back for that particular game. I just had a gut feeling. No reason for me to, other than I've seen him work through it after a few starts before, and he typically gets it back. And so I also do think that he'll probably have it now for at least his next several outings back out there. He'll be able to sit on that, and that means you're going to get good John Gray moving forward. And that, for me, was the biggest thing that I learned. So I'll go first on this one, the things we learned from the series. Usually I throw it to y'all first. I'll take the low-hanging fruit. The Rockies' starting pitching remains good, and I think that that's the most important thing. There's a lot of stuff going on out there. Obviously, after a series with the Dodgers, your confidence is going to be shaken in a number of ways, especially when it goes the way that it did. And so to come back out immediately, get the response, three-game sweep now as it turned out, but to win them on the strength of your starting pitching, to get right back to the formula, mostly very great defense again in the series. So to me, that was the big takeaway, was they weren't so shaken by the losing streak that they've gotten away from who they are. Their starting pitching is going to continue to get them through this season, I think. Kale, what's the biggest thing you learned this series?
I guess the biggest thing I learned is, I guess, me relearning something I think I knew at the beginning of the season, is this team is really starting to look like what I thought they were going to look like coming to the season, which is an offense that's generally really good but can be off and on. outside of your stars who you can count on game in and game out, and really good starting pitching, but a suspect bullpen. And that's what this team is right now, and that's what I thought they were going to be coming into the season, and that's why I had hope for them to be a team that was around 500 and in the playoff conversation. And after the hot start, I thought, wow, maybe this bullpen is way better than I thought it was going to be and all that. Then they massively regressed.
This is they are who we thought they were.
For sure. And I think in a lot of ways, what I learned is that Nolan Arenado needs to be next to Trevor Story. Like, those two guys in the lineup, they have to be 2 and 3. Yes, it's you know, I'm not going to say keep your enemies, you know, keep your friends close and your enemies closer.
Two of us.
Precisely.
You and I.
They need that sibling rivalry. Like, they feed and fester off it. And as soon as you don't give them that, they're really not their best. Like, you think of all the younger brothers in the world who are better than their older brothers, and that's because of the way they were, you know, pushed around in a way. And really, they were able to thrive in doing that in so many ways. And you see how good Trevor Story is and these numbers that he continues to, you know, put up at these all-time great shortstop numbers. First guy to hit, you know, youngest to 100 homers and all these other things that you see. And it's also equally true for Arenado, too. You know, and we're seeing that those two guys paired together, while not ideal because you have some options to split them up with left-handed bats, particularly Charlie Blackmon. But you know what? If that's what Nolan needs, so be it. And the other thing I don't know if I learned it, but I think I overheard the teacher say it, is that Josh Fuentes is going to be getting a lot more time at first base. I think there's very a good chance. We're talking about sibling rivalry, and we're talking about all these things that people need to be successful. You know, he went 3 for 10 in the series, stole a bag last night. I think he's going to get a lot more playing time over there at first.
But do not bury the lead on your own victory lap there, sir. If I get to congratulate myself on John Gray's 96-mile-an-hour fastball, you've got to say a little something about the athletic quality, capable, steadfast defense we saw from Josh Fuentes at first base and the impact that it made on a close, in a series where all the games were close.
You know, I don't know if defensive abilities can be measured inside of one's DNA, but if it's possible, if we somehow got the nanotechnology, I think the entire Arenado Fuentes family would very clearly have that in their DNA. It is just a part of who they are. And, you know, if Trevor Story makes a throwing error and throws it over the first baseman's head, or really just makes a bad throw offline or in the dirt, which we've seen, it's crazy how many errors he's made so far in the early going. That is on him. However, if as you're making that throw over to first base and you go, oh, that's my dude over there, you're probably much less likely to make a throwing error. But as you're making that throw, you see someone over at first base that you don't quite believe in, that last second that you release the ball off the ends of your fingertips could be the difference of spiking it in the dirt or having it sail high and wide. And so I think Fuentes over at first base is giving, you know, Story and or Arenado that much more confidence over there. And I think while, you know, again, Josh Fuentes offensively might lack a little something, you know, to be desired, what he is bringing to the team defensively is, again, nothing that can be measured, much like what Tony Walters does behind the plate. And I think now, finally, after about 2 years of it, people are realizing how vitally important Tony Walters is behind the plate. Josh Fuentes isn't as valuable as Tony Walters is because he's only playing first base, but he's got a value that you can't really measure. And I think we got to see that a little bit in this series.
Hi, guys. I'm back. Sorry about that.
It's good. It's good. We covered for you, I think, mostly pretty well.
Yeah, I got most of my point out, so I'm assuming you guys already responded and did all that, and I'm sure you said wonderful things.
Yeah, that's how yes, I'm choosing to interpret the last couple minutes of the podcast anyway. So I did want to wrap this thing up here, unless we've got anything else particular to say on that series, by taking a look forward here as the Rockies return home to face the San Diego Padres. Where's the level of confidence? The Padres are hot, hot, hot right now at 19-3. They've been playing really good baseball. They were hitting all the grand slams in the world, and obviously coming into Coors Field. Doesn't look like they've got their pitchers for the series announced yet, but it looks like the Rockies will kick off with Kyle Freeland. That's already been fixed on the probable starters page. Good for them. Antonio Senzatella then will be set up to pitch the second game of the set, followed by Ryan Castellani, and finishing it out with Germán Márquez. A four-game series, you know, for now.
Right, yeah, for now. Yeah, it's going really well for the Rockies right now, obviously, on their win streak. Padres are playing really great. They've dominated mainly at home because the fans at Petco Park have been unlike any other. But, you know, there's no real reason why teams are winning at home versus on the road. We're actually finding out that teams are winning at home much at a much lower rate than in the past because of the absence of fans, of course.
Yeah.
So I think there's a good shot. Again, you take a split for right now. You do hope for more, but a split, I think, is now, unlike the Diamondbacks series where I said, best case scenario is a split. Now you say, no, best case scenario is you take 3 out of 4 and you hope, okay, you definitely can go ahead and take 2. Whereas the D-backs series, if you walked away with 1, you go, man, yeah, this team is really struggling right now, but there's a good shot that they can take this series and really feel a lot more comfortable about their spot in the playoffs and tell Jeff Breidich, essentially, with their actions, get us some help. And he goes out and gets help. Won't be anyone big, won't be anyone substantial, but you can bring in somebody new by the time Monday's trade deadline rolls around.
Kale, what's your level of confidence at?
I'll give it a solid 6 out of 10. The Padres, I have caught a lot of their games recently just because they've been on national TV and they're playing really good baseball right now.
Good.
Part of me feels like they have to regress at some point because things like grand slams and all those, just looking at the numbers, those things can't continue to happen. But that being said, they've got some of the most exciting young players in the sport. Their pitching's been lights out. I mean, they're down 6-1 right now, which is great. So hopefully they'll lose today and maybe not feel as hot coming into Coors Field. But I'm scared of the Padres right now as a Rockies fan, and I didn't feel that way earlier in the season. Last time we played them, definitely not.
There is a reason they call them Slam Diego.
Slam, yeah, that's a good nickname. It is. That is a good nickname. I tend to agree with you, Kale. I think it's a little bit of a hot stretch powered by their entire lineup being in the zone at the same time, and that tends not to last. But it's good ball club. I do think they're going to cool off the same way the Rockies cooled off from their hot stretch, probably not to that same extent or whatever. But I also think the Rockies have the right guy going to the mound in Game 1 and Kyle Freeland to set the tone for the series and to get past whatever oddness or weirdness they may be feeling from having not played the game or whatever's going on. They've got the right guy to be mentally focused on the job at hand when he takes the hill on Friday.
That's right. And for anyone who's not, you know, sure, you know, about making up today's game, they can just do it as part of a doubleheader because there's still several games left between Colorado and Arizona. I think Colorado still even needs to travel to Arizona again one more time. So you're right. Freeland is the guy you want on the hill again at Coors Field. And, you know, where his head is at mentally right now is so good. And to say, oh, good, like I would have rather faced San Diego and I would rather the challenge to do it at home right in my backyard. He is... I'm not going to say quickly becoming, but he is just in his own way a version of Benny the Jet Rodriguez, where he gets to play in that sandlot right there in his backyard, and that's just his neighborhood where he goes and plays and is becoming a Colorado legend in that way. Well, remains to be seen if we'll see him, you know, become a Hall of Famer or anything like that, but he's Benny the Jet, and he's going to show out tomorrow against San Diego. I'm really excited for that one.
That's awesome. I love that analogy. Well, I mean, Sam, I mean, you had me at Benny the Jet, obviously. I was an easy target for that, clearly.
I could have said Kenny DeNunez. I mean, he was the pitcher in the game. So, I mean, not to throw around like I know the starting nine of the Sandlot, but Kenny DeNunez with a Kansas City Monarchs cap on, too. You love to see that.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And that has been your Sandlot talk of the day. But yeah, we'll continue to obviously do the thing here and talk baseball, but we're also going to continue to talk about what's going on in the world and make sure that we all recognize again that what we're doing here is a thing we're lucky that we get to do, especially in this year with everything going on. It is a privilege for us to get to do it, and as long as we have that, I think we all agree that it's just important to speak out for those that don't have that privilege and for whatever reason. And so, however inartfully, again, because they make sure that we all are able to take care of our families, we got to make sure to give a shout out here to Breckenridge Brewery. Make sure to call down to the farmhouse at 303-803-1380 from noon to 8. Use code DNVR because you'll save $5 off both the food and the drink. I've been a big fan of that Avalanche Amber Ale as of late. It is the perfect companion to Avalanche Hockey, which I think, you know, again, once they get back out there and start doing their thing, is going to be on the up and up here pretty soon. And of course, you know that we have been making a little bit of extra money, and you can do the same if you get down on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. If you know your sports, well, then put your money where your mouth is. Get a little skin in the game. Have some fun with it, whether it's betting the over on, you know, how many strikeouts a pitcher's going to get on any individual game, or you think you know what the final line's going to be. You just want to take a team to win a particular one. You know what's going on out there. And because of that, if you download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, you get a chance to win a little bit of extra cash with your sports watching experience. Highly recommend it. It's a whole lot of fun. I've really only gotten into it for the first time this year, but it's made some of the, especially, you know, the non-Denver teams, when you go outside of your network and you're just going to watch a sporting event, and it's just like, oh, I know this guy can strike dudes out. I'm going to see if I can win $10 and get a little, win a six-pack of Breck Brew, or 15 cans. Got to get that 15-can pack. That's what you end up winning when you win on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. So download it now. Use promo code DNVR to claim your share of $100 million in instant giveaways and put yourself in the running for the $1 million cash top prize. That's promo code DNVR to get your share of $100 million in prizes only at DraftKings. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. Other terms and conditions and restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-522-4700.
And if you're out there and you're saying, hey, I do need to watch a little bit of baseball tonight, Dodgers-Giants still going on without a hitch, second game of that doubleheader. And I would have to say my DraftKings pick of the week right now would have to be on the Giants. And that's not because I want the Dodgers to lose, but it's Kevin Gausman's on the hill, and this is going to be his last start potentially with the Giants, as he's going to be one of the top trade acquisitions that's out there, and he knows full and well that he's got that opportunity to increase his stock as a free agent. So he's going to go out there and shove against the best team in baseball, the LA Dodgers. So right now that's plus 155 for Gausman, and you are not going to regret that one, partially because you're going to win some money, and partially because the Dodgers are going to get a big, fat L in that game with Kevin Gausman. Colorado's own Kevin Gausman. That's my pick of the week.
Love it. Love it. Good stuff. All right, boys, final thoughts for the day?
I took last night off of, you know, intensely watching sports for the first time in a long time, and I would just recommend doing the same for anybody tonight with nothing going on in Denver. No Nuggets game, no Rockies game. Take some time to reflect and talk with your family or friends about what's going on in the country.
I love that. Yeah, I decided to wear a Frank Thomas shirt that I got at the Hall of Fame when he was inducted in 2014. Same thing with the hat as he was one of my favorite players growing up. You know, black man, didn't care. He was a baseball player. He's a human being. I wasn't raised that way. And so it was an honor to actually, the day after he was inducted, I actually got to shake his hand. And he was just so generous with his time. And I actually, when I came time for my confirmation, I did also have an uncle named Tom. That was partially where the Thomas came from. But I chose the name Thomas as my confirmation name because of Frank Thomas. So I want to give him a very big shout out right now.
That's awesome. And I'll echo what Kale said and say that's what I'm going to do is take the rest of the day and have a plan. I think it's important to create a plan for things that you can do individually. We've all gotten so used to, especially in the age of social media and me being a talking head with a podcast, and I'm not separate from it. I'm at the forefront of it. But again, of debating and trying to get other people to go do a thing. And I share information, and we're here asking people to go do a thing. But the thing that I'm going to do is make a plan about what I can do every day to help our black brothers and sisters through the hardship that they're going through. And if you have a plan, stick to it and execute it, like a baseball pitcher. It's like, go out there, create a plan, a game plan for how we're going to fix this. And then let's go about putting it into action.
Love that. Yeah, pitchers don't just go out on the mound and pitch. They got to do some legwork. They got to do some things. So I think that's a great plan. Good use of time for all y'all.
So let's all put out a little love into the world. And say thank you all to listening in. I know it's been a lot. We hope you can appreciate all of it. And we'll get back to more and more baseball, as I've said. But these things aren't going away. And until they do, we'll continue to talk about them. So make sure you're following everybody on social media. You're subscribed to the DNVR.com. You help out all of our sponsors because they really do make it possible for us to do this at all. And you just remain absolutely awesome and hopefully introspective out there. We will remain absolutely Patrick Lyons, Kale Sorbo, and Drew Kreisman in here. And until next time, we will see you at the ballpark.